Welcome back, Dakota Territory. The journey Dakota Trails and Tales continues. Thanks to High Plains Apache. Talk to the folks over in south of Fargo or Mandan about your pest control 2025 or 2024, either one. All right, I mentioned this conversation with Jason Bohr. We got to get to it. Executive Director of the Lignite Energy Council. We got to clear some air.
And Jason Bohr, I was trying to come up with some clever loose Bohr. We got a loose Bohr on the loose.
One way or the other.
Well, that's better than Jason is loose.
Yes. I my name doesn't lend itself well to great nicknames.
Yeah, I was trying to think of some way to put your name into, like a TV program, and it's just, I'm not hitting it.
Jason Bourne is the only one that I like. When I pick up the phone and say Jason Bourne, sometimes people react like, wait a minute, he's real?
Yeah. Are you real? Should I pinch you?
I'm as real as you can imagine.
All right. So we agree 100% that coal needs to be a viable. Oh, by the way, I forgot one point in my little dissertation about 2007 to today and the reduction of emissions. In 2007 was the height of coal's impact in providing reliable, affordable electricity. 57% of the electricity generated in 2007. Today, we're barely at 23% and going down. And that's why we're having this conversation. How do we keep coal as a viable base load mix of our energy supply?
Yeah, I mean, I look at it as, we need all of the ingredients to work together for a recipe to be successful. You can't just put all, whatever, potatoes in your soup and have it be good. This is what we're looking at. A diverse energy supply takes the best attributes of each source and amplifies them. Coal's best attribute is it's always on availability, and lignite never has availability challenges because it's a mine mouth operation. To be able to have electricity whenever you want, years in advance, that is a benefit that lignite provides that it is not really compensated for. Electrons are basically valued the same in the marketplace, whether they are dispatchable or reliable or whether they're not. That's how you solve this problem, is by properly valuing the differences in electrons from different fuel sources. It shouldn't be about clean electrons or non-clean electrons, because electron is electron. But the characteristics that those electrons bring, such as dispatchability or reliability, those are valuable. And I think the market will eventually respond to the value in coal's electrons as brownouts, blackouts increase and the grid becomes more unstable.
One thing I have to ask you about, Jason, because of what we had happen this past weekend, solar flares are predicted to be a bigger deal. Not only do we have them this past weekend, 2025 is supposed to be a normal cycle year for significant solar flares. Is our grid protected so that we have solar flare issues and that burst of energy that we can handle it?
I think it's as predicted as good as reasonably can be expected at this point. Our members invest a lot of resources into grid reliability and resilience initiatives specifically targeted towards cyber attacks and natural phenomena. So they are investing in those things. I think there's probably some more things that the federal government should do to encourage storage of components and those types of things. But we're in a good spot, probably not a perfect spot, but I'm not losing any sleep about it. And I think we're gonna be able to survive.
In coal country, in the lignite coal country, in the past 2.5 years, since the last time you and I sat in this office and talked about the future of energy production, CO2, putting CO2 in a pipeline, putting CO2 in the pore space and under Oliver and Mercer County has reached a new level, a new pitch. And I know that there are people right now shouting from that side of the camera saying, Trent, asking why they're partnering with Summit to put in CO2 pipelines. So there's the question. Why are you doing that?
Yeah, so there is no partnership between the Lignite Energy Council or its members and Summit. The Summit project is independent of the Lignite Energy Council, and it's independent of our members. We share policy priorities, which is why we stood beside them in the legislature and stopped bad policies from being implemented. But we're not working, what they're doing is not a coal project, but it needs good policies to succeed, just like ours needs good policies to succeed.
Summit, as 2 hours ago, I heard the CEO saying that it was partnering with Minn Kota, one of your members, in a project. that leads everybody to believe that Lignite is a partnering across the board, and that's not the case.
So to my understanding, Minn Kota and Summit have a storage agreement, which is essentially conceptually like a shared parking lot for the CO2 at the end of disposition. There's no shared infrastructure. There's no shared pipelines. There's no shared sources, those types of things. So essentially, something like that is actually, there's a positive way to look at that. North Dakota has worked for decades to have the best storage regime policy in the country because pore space is a resource. And North Dakota has worked to be able to give landowners the ability to make money off of that resource. And the fact that Summit's coming here, that Minn Kota's here, it means that policy works, that people are going to be able to make money off of that pore space in their land. The fact that there's some overlap between the pore space that Summit's doing and Minn Kota is doing, it's not a partnership in infrastructure. But again, they're both benefiting from the policies that North Dakota implemented to do this exact thing, which is monetize the pore space, give farmers, landowners another revenue source.
Eminent domain. We know that eminent domain is constitutional for a public use. I've always had a concern, I continue to echo this concern, that Summit is transporting CO2. It's not a public use, it's a private company gain. What's Lignite Energy Council stand on eminent domain, particularly as it involves CO2 pipeline?
Our members have always tried to prioritize relationships with landowners and to make sure that eminent domain is always only a last resort. There's generally ways to do things without eminent domain. Again, our position is that landowners should be able to be free to develop their pore space as they see fit. The economics should not incentivize or discourage people from monetizing their resource to the best of their ability. But we are not in favor of expanding the authority for eminent domain. I think you can look at the history of the electricity industry, and eminent domain is really extremely rare, as it should be.
Yeah, it's a completely different deal when as a public carrier.
And that I think is one of those yet to be determined facets in how the CO2 industry develops in North Dakota. What is that treatment of the resource? For us, our viewpoint is this is our survival. And we're trying to capture CO2, put it through a pipeline, get it. Our ultimate objective is to get it to the oil field. That's where the value really starts to multiply. And we need those policies to enable all of the pore space owners along the route to have input and be able to sell that pore space, to monetize the resource that they have. That pore space is, you know, it's valuable to them. And our policies should figure out a way to accurately characterize and value that pore space. And I don't know, I'm not familiar with all of those discussions along how long Summit has, you know, every element of that conversation.
Well, many times I have seen you as a representative of the coal industry have been forced to speak for Summit Carbon Solutions, and you can't fairly do that.
Well, yeah, it's kind of a weird spot because, like, I know those people. I worked with many of those people in the coal industry. And so, personally, they are my friends. And conceptually, I understand where they're trying to go. And I like them. I am friends with them. But I don't have the knowledge to be able to speak comprehensively about their project. Mm-hmm. But when I have had conversations with them, I think they are wanting to do the right thing. We have wanted to create policies that work for everybody who wants to participate in the CO2 economy. That's where we've coming from. Part of the problem is we've been working on CO2 in North Dakota for 25 years. So when people hear CO2, they think of the coal industry. And we've kind of like gained that space in people's brains. So when somebody else comes in and starts talking about CO2, just the mental shortcut is to associate it with the coal industry. And that, I think, has led to some of the confusion that we faced. But we're probably aligned on many of the policies with those guys.
But I'm not a spokesperson for Lignite Energy Council. But my observation is that you as a Lignite Energy person have always supported CO2 capture as a valuable commodity. And a commodity meaning something that has value can be sent somewhere else. Maybe it's enhanced oil recovery. Maybe it is making sure your beer is carbed right. Maybe it is liquid night or dry ice, whatever the case may be. There are tremendous valuable uses for that. Lignite has never been about tank. Put it in a hole a mile and a half underground because we've got to improve the environment. I've never heard you say that's a good thing.
Yeah, that's not where we want to be. That might maybe where we start out. And in fact, that is where we're going to start out. But our goal for the last 30 years has been to find a way to get it into the oil field where it can be a value-added commodity. And that's where some of these federal government policies get a little bit challenging. And I don't know that there's a black or white answer, because when you look at it from one perspective, the federal government is going to build some of this infrastructure in the next 10 years that might be good for 50 or 60 years. And so we're trying to protect policies that kind of bake into place opportunities for the future, but we want to do so in a way that's collaborative with the local landowners and the local businesses and addressing concerns.
Final thing, Jason, what do you want the world most to know about lignite energy?
If your lights are on today, you need to thank the lignite industry. These guys are working night and day to make sure that electricity is reliable and affordable. And these people in the industry, their families, their homeowners, they live in these communities, they live in the environment, and that is truly their number one priority.
In fact, I'll take it one step farther. If your lights are on today, you not only need to thank people in the lignite industry, you need to get very loud and make sure that the policymakers understand how important coal as a reliable, affordable source of our energy for the future is. It's not about the people working in the industry. It's about what we at home enjoy with electricity that, when it's too late, we may not appreciate it.
And in order to make your voice heard, go to lignite.com/fight the EPA. That is a tool that we created for people to have their voices heard by the EPA and tell the EPA that what they're doing is wrong. It's not consistent with the science, and it's not consistent with a prosperous lifestyle.
Yep. Tell them to stop the crematory process of the lignite people. Thank you, Jason Bohr.
Thank you.
A to Z, without the use of GPS technology, on a journey we call Dakota Trails and Tales. We'll do it again Monday. Thanks to all.